Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for April 30th, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Acute pain activates different brain areas versus chronic pain.
When someone has the ability of putting himself in another person's position, it is more difficult for him or her to be violent.
The way you test a Ouija board is to cover it so that the participants can't see the board. When you do that, the Ouija board suddenly starts spouting gibberish.
We've been interested in classes of electronics that enable intimate integration with the human body.
We're dedicating this week's podcast to the brain. We'll tell you how silk could help diagnose brain disorders, how the material in crab shells could be used to treat spinal cord injuries, and why chronic pain sufferers process pain signals differently than other people. And we'll reveal the psychology behind Ouija boards. But first, Suzanne Bard says empathy and violence may have more in common than you might think.
The ability to empathize with other people is controlled by the prefrontal cortex of the brain and an area of the temporal lobe called the amygdala. But according to Luis Moya, a psychobiologist at the University of Valencia in Spain, studies have shown that the same brain regions are activated during aggressive acts as well.
These parts of the brain overlap in a surprising way with those that regulate aggression and violence, which means that these circuits can control both empathy and violence. When someone has the ability of putting himself in another person's position, it is more difficult for him or her to be violent.
He says the findings have implications for criminal rehabilitation and broader social problems.
Maybe empathy is the other side of the coin of violence. So maybe we increase empathy, we could reduce violence, and we work for a more peaceful society.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. People with chronic pain process pain signals differently than most people, according to neuroscientist Vanya Upkarian of Northwestern University Medical School. He and his colleagues measured the response of an area of the brain called the nucleus accumbens in back pain patients and healthy controls while they were exposed to a hot, painful stimulus. The nucleus accumbens is part of the brain's reward center.
We in fact see that the chronic back pain patients' own pain decreases in the presence of the acute pain, consistent with the idea that, in fact, that was subconsciously rewarding to them, even though consciously they were feeling the same amount of pain.
He says chronic pain also seems to activate the brain's limbic system more so than acute pain does.
Acute pain activates different brain areas versus chronic pain. The pain that's chronic seems to become more emotional, more related to self-consciousness, to how the subject sees themselves relative to the pain, while the acute injury pain is more sensory in its qualities. It's more the evaluation of the external world, in a sense, impinging on the body.
Next, Karina Wu investigates a new therapeutic use for silk.
Making sensors and other electronics that can conform to soft tissues in the body is no easy task. They have to be thin and flexible and integrate seamlessly onto the body's surface. Now a team of researchers has found a way to meld an electronic device onto one of the most curved and convoluted surfaces of all, the brain. John Rogers is a material scientist at the University of Illinois.
We've been interested in classes of electronics that enable intimate and conformal integration with the human body.
He and his colleagues placed a thin mesh of electrodes onto a layer of silk and implanted them into an animal's brain. They then washed away the silk with a warm saltwater solution.
And as it washes away, it frees this ultra-thin electrode mesh such that it can drop down onto the deep folds and crevices of the brain and actually get sucked down onto that surface.
Such electronics could be used to diagnose brain disorders or monitor the brain activity of people with epilepsy to warn them before seizures occur. Rogers says current technology for doing so is pretty coarse.
There's a huge opportunity for dramatic improvements in that kind of technology, and we hope to be able to contribute something along those lines.
Rogers says they're now developing flexible devices with more complex circuitry to fully map out the brain's electrical activity.
Thanks, Karina. In a related story, Suzanne reports that a tough material called chitin could have medical applications.
The chitin found in the shells of crustaceans can do more than just protect shrimp, crabs, and lobsters. Researchers have found that a derivative of chitin can repair spinal cord injury. Richard Borgens is director of Purdue University's Center for Paralysis Research. He and his colleagues found that the sugar chitosan repaired damaged nerves in the test tube.
And we did a first study where we actually looked in the whole guinea pig with the spinal cord injury to see if it would restore the ability to conduct nerve impulses through that injury. And it did.
Borgen says chitosan is non-toxic and safe to use in the body. The researchers plan to do more testing and hope to begin clinical trials in humans within 2 years.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, Justin Warner reports on a troubling new air pollution study.
Air pollution may adversely affect a child's intelligence starting in the womb. This according to a study conducted in Poland and led by environmental health scientist Frederica Pereira of Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Pereira's team monitored healthy, non-smoking pregnant women for exposure to common air pollutants called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs for short. They're a byproduct of burning fossil fuels. The researchers gave the women small backpacks fitted with air sampling devices to wear during their pregnancies. They also took regular blood and urine samples to check for biological markers of PAH exposure. After the women gave birth, the researchers tracked the health of their children and gave the children a comprehensive cognitive test at age 5.
And the finding was that prenatal exposure to higher levels of PAHs was related to decreases in scores on standard tests of children's cognitive development at age 5. And that's of concern because of the link between such tests and future academic performance.
The difference between the higher exposure group and the lower exposure group was the equivalent of nearly 4 IQ points. And that's controlling for a number of other factors, including maternal intelligence and education, exposure to secondhand smoke and lead, and even PAH exposure after birth. Pereira's team got a similar result in a recent study in New York City. Pereira says the only real way to reduce the impact of these PAH pollutants is to burn less of the fossil fuels that produce them.
Finally today, Suzanne has another episode of our ongoing series, Reality Check, where we investigate paranormal claims, weird phenomena, and science folklore.
To true believers, Ouija boards transmit messages from the dead and make predictions about the future. Listener Daryl Andachi of Seattle, Washington, has seen the popular parlor game spell out some pretty uncanny things, and he wants to know if there's anything to it. We asked Ben Radford, managing editor of Skeptical Inquirer magazine, to explain what's really going on.
They work by what's called the Edemoder effect. That is, people will unconsciously spell out words with their hands. The human mind will subconsciously send out tremors and movements and spell out things. And that's basically the answer. Now, again, all this happens subconsciously. People don't realize they're doing it. And if you ask somebody, well, you know, your hand was on it. Did you intend to spell out this name? They would say, no, I didn't. I promise I didn't. And they're probably right. They probably weren't consciously doing it. And there's a very interesting way to test this. The way you test a Ouija board is to cover it so that the hands are free to move, but the participants can't see the board. When you do that, the Ouija board suddenly starts spouting gibberish.
Radford says this is strong evidence that the Ouija board is guided not by some unseen spirit, but instead by the participants.
Thanks, Suzanne. And if there's a weird phenomenon you want us to investigate, or if you have any other science questions for us to answer on the show, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll receive a Science Update mug. Well, that's all we have for you this week. It's springtime, and next week we'll answer a listener's question about how plants know when to start producing buds. And we'll tell you why a bee needs fast color vision and how flocks of homing pigeons decide which way to turn. But if you can't wait for next week's podcast, you can get your daily dose of science by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition, every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.